Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is episode 4 of Aman, a Wikipedia reading. And Aman is on the Arabian Peninsula, that sort of little box between Africa and Asia. I don't know whether it's part of Africa or part of Asia. I suppose it's part of Asia, depending how they define Africa, because I think in that box you've also got Israel, Lebanon, and starting off to Syria and that type of stuff. It's quite interesting. Aman is a sultanate, a unitary sultanate, and the sultan has absolute power to the point that the power has become, well, in my view, toxic. In a world where, in previous times, where there was not the information out, it's too complex, I think, to have freedom, I suppose, in the Middle Ages and stuff like that. The actual infrastructure of freedom is too hard, so you need a philosophy and a religion, religion which removes all personal freedom. And this is interesting in that Muhammad sent letters out to these different people, and these people read this stuff, and the word had come about that this was the religion to use to get everyone in order and have armies and destroy other people. I mean, this is the awful truth of it all. This has happened, this process of, well, how can I control everyone? It was important to control everyone when everyone was the only source of innovation, of wealth and power. So if I, like nowadays, if I held 100 Australians in a camp and forced them to work, they'd produce nothing compared to if I rewarded them and put them in a company. They'd produce fantastic wealth because they'd be able to interact with technology, computers, communication, high technology. So essentially the business model of sultanates has passed, and it's only existing in these places where they've got a huge natural resource to come out, and the fact that the sultanate is a convenient method for an oil company to come in and take over. And so you've had Britain RAAF planes bombing people out in gravel deserts in central, in the backwaters of Oman. It's just sick making. But so you've got a series, you've got I've got Qatar, UAE, B something or other. It's an island, a peninsula, a splodge, and then you've got the splodge, which is UAE, and Bahrain, that's right. So it's Bahrain, Qatar, UAE, and Oman coming over. Now we're going to after this, read Yemen, and then eventually Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is going to make me sick. I think this is awful. They've got... we've just done sort of the industry, which is sort of foreign workers coming in and being exploited. And essentially, anyway, if you're a Amani, you automatically get discrimination and your top job. You'd have to be stupid to be smart, I think. It's smart to be stupid and stupid to be smart. That's I think it's the most bizarre thing. So if you've got a natural talent of being stupid, you've got a great job in what sounds the most inefficient country ever. Okay, oil and gas. Oman's Oman proved reserves of petroleum is about 5.5 billion barrels, 25th largest in the world. All extracted and processed by the PDO. With proven reserves holding approximately steady, although oil production has been declining. The Ministry of Oil and Gas is responsible for all the oil infrastructure in Oman. Following the 70s energy crisis, Oman doubled their oil output between 79 and 85. In 1980, oil and gas represented 71% of the government's revenues. In 2016, oil and gas share of the government's revenue represented 72%, increased a little bit. The government's reliance on oil and gas as a source of income dropped by 1% in the next year. Oil and gas represents 31% of the nominal GDP, whatever that means. Between 2000 and 2007, production fell by more than 26%. Production has recovered for some reason, I don't know why. Oman's natural gas reserves are estimated at 845 billion cubic meters, ranking 28th in the world. Third in the world, I think, is... that word is getting out. This is a Bhutan, but... the B country. B, no, there's Qatar. It's Qatar. B, it's gone. You can see my brain not working. B. The B country. Gone. Absolutely gone, isn't it? It's horrible. In September 2019, Oman confirmed to become a member of the first Middle Eastern country to host the International Gas Union Research Conference. Wow. A 16th iteration event will be held in 2020. You think. Tourism, which is, this is, you know, we went to Egypt, but and we were shown, in the 90s, we were shown child labour. And we just said, oh, look, that's child labour. It's not on. You know, who are we speaking for ourselves? No, not saying you're doing anything wrong, we're just saying we don't want to see it. It's wrong. And how you could be tourists in a country with so much exploitation, it's hard to say. Tourism in Oman has grown considerably recently. You expected unethical tourism, and it's going to be one of the largest industries in the country. The World Trade Travel and Tourism Council stated that Oman is the fastest growing tourism destination in the Middle East. Wow. Tourism, you're missing out on Syria for a while. Tourism contributed 2.8% to the Omani GDP. It grew from RO, 55 million, which is 1.3 billion, to 1.8 billion in about 10 years. Citizens of the Gulf Cooperation Council, including Omanis, are residing outside Oman, represent the highest ratio of all tourists visiting Oman. Estimated at 48%, I would agree. The second highest number of visitors come from other Asian countries, who account for 17% of the total number of visitors. A challenge to tourism development in Oman is the reliance on government-owned firm Umram as a key actor to develop tourism sector, which potentially creates a market barrier to entry of private sector actors and a crowding out effect. Other key issues to the tourism sector. We went for a holiday in Cuba, and it was just so fun. Another key issue to the tourism, and of course, if you were a wealthy person, if you were a backpacker, it was just bliss. It was just like an Australian holiday house. You know, it was their top stuff. It was just, oh, great. Like, it was fantastic. Yeah, it wouldn't compete with all the norms. Another key issue to tourism is the deepening understanding of ecosystem and biodiversity in Oman to guarantee their protection and preservation. That's where they decided that they were going to kill 90% of a protected zone just to allow oil expedition, and then it lost us. Oman is one of the most diverse environments in the Middle East, with various tourist attractions and particularly well-known as adventure culture tourism. Oh God, Muscat, the capital of Oman, was named the second best city in the world to visit in the world in 2012 by the guide Lonely Planet. Muscat is also chosen as the capital of Arab tourism in 2012. And Lonely Planet is an Australian tourism book. So therefore it's got this sort of strange lilting, I believe it's Australian book, Australian voice in it, and that is, like, as Australians, you're a middle power, people can ignore you, you know, kick you about the place, and they either like you, you hate you, you just go, and it's sort of, it's somehow, as Australian tourists, you're not as intrusive as American or British tourists, I don't understand. Okay, I do remember visiting Cuba, and Cuba saying, when we came to Cuba, that they hadn't seen Australians before. Amazing. And so they looked at the passport, their head cocked to the side, a bit unusual, a bit hard to understand what's going on. And we said, oh, look, it's another type of Canadian. Oh, okay. In November 2019, a man made the rule, like you're making a rule, of visa on arrival and exception, and introduced the concept of e-visa for tourists from all nationalities. Under new laws, visitors are required to apply for a visa in advance by visiting Oman's online government portal. Wow. Industry, innovation, and infrastructure. In industry, innovation, and infrastructure, Oman is still faced with significant challenges as per the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals Index. As of 2019, Oman has scored high on the rates of internet use, mobile broadband, subscription, logistics performance, and average top 3 university rankings. And on average of top 3 university what that means. Meanwhile, Oman scored low in the rate of scientific and technical publications and research development spending. Oman's manufacturing value-added GDP was 8.4, which is lower than the average of the Arab world. And the world average is 15.6%. In terms of research and development expenditure in GDP, Oman's share on average is 0.2% between 2011 and 15, while the world's average was 2.11%, so the effect of 10. The majority of firms in Oman operate in the oil and gas, construction and trade sectors. Oman is refurbishing and expanding the ports and infrastructure at Muscat, Durham, Sofa, Salah, to expand tourism, local production and export shares. Oman is also expanding its downstream operation by constructing a refinery and a petrochemical plant in Durham, with a 23,000 barrels per day capacity projected complex in 2021, which is rather strange because you have to be pretty switched on to refine today's oil. A, the oil is getting a bit more icky with it, and it is very, very hard. Oil refinery is very, very hard to get right. Okay. The largest employers in the private sector are construction, wholesale and resale manufacturing sectors, respectively. Construction accounts for nearly 48% of the total labour force, followed by wholesale and retail, which accounts for around 15%. The total employment in manufacturing, which accounts for around 12% of the employment in the private sector. The percentage of armies employed in the construction and manufacturing sectors is nevertheless low, as in 2011-20 statistics. Oh, right. That is a bit of a problem, isn't it? However, it doesn't sound as though there's a huge service sector here. Okay, Oman, as per Global Innovation Index report, disclosed below expectations in innovation relative to countries classified under high income. Oman is ranked 80th out of 129 countries for the Innovation Index, which takes into account consideration factors such as political environment, education, infrastructure, and business sophistication. I wouldn't pay much attention to these indexes. Innovation, technology-based growth, and economic diversification are hindered by an economic growth that relies on infrastructure expansion, which is heavily depends on a high percentage of low-skilled, low-wage foreign labour. Another challenge to the innovation is the Dutch disease phenomenon, which creates an oil and gas investment lock-in while relying heavily on imported products and services in the other circuit. Well, wow, there is such a thing as a Dutch disease. So we'll see if I can remember that. Oh, gee. Bahrain. See, Wiz. It's for me, it's rather interesting in that the information gets there, and as soon as I start distracting, say, I'm not going to remember it, it then gets isolated in a point, and then I have to walk away from it and I come back to go here. But it's Dutch disease. I want to get interested. Such a locked-in system hinders local business growth and global competitiveness in other sectors and thus impedes economic diversification. The inefficiencies and bottlenecks in business operations are a result of heavy dependence on natural resources and addiction to imports in Oman's suggested factor-driven economy. The third hindrance to innovation in Oman is the economic structure that is heavily dependent on a few large firms while granting few opportunities to SMEs to enter the market, which impedes healthy market share competition between firms. The ratio of patent application per million was unbelievably low, and the MENA region average was 1.5, so they're nothing, while high-income countries' average was approximately 48 in the same year. I've got 90 patent applications. How about that? Don't do it anymore because you need downstream cooperation. There's no point patenting something and sitting in a shed, yeah? Okay, agriculture and fishing. Oman's fishing industry contributed 0.78% to the GDP. Fish exports between 2000 and 2016 grew to a huge $144 million. The main importer of Omani fish is Vietnam, which imported more than $8 million in value, and the second biggest importer was the United Arab Emirates, which imported around a huge amount. Other main importers are Saudi Arabia, Brazil, China. Omani's consumption of fish is almost two times the world's average. Well, what a place. I have just become a fish person myself. Since heart operation, I've got the second lease on life. It's rehabilitate, eat fish, and ravioli. There's one thing I haven't heard of, a fish ravioli. I don't think it would go really well. I don't think it would go well. I wonder if there is. Okay. Omani's strength in the fishing industry coming from having a good market system, a long coastline, wide water area, and high participation of women in the industry. fuck's sake. Sorry, I shouldn't say. Oman, on the other hand, lacks sufficient infrastructure, research and development, quality and safety monitoring, together with limited contribution by the fishing industry to the GDP. Dates also represent 8% of all fruit crop production. Further, date farms employ 50% of the total agricultural area in the country. Oman's estimated production of dates is 350 tons, making it the ninth largest producer of dates. A vast majority of date production comes from only 10 cultivars. Oh, God. Oman's total exports of dates is $12.6 million. What a big thing. That's like, I just wonder what almost any industry that you look at, like chickpeas or honey in Australia, that's $7 billion. However, we just had the big barley bash. You know, where they just didn't want to eat. I wonder if we could export barley to Bali. That would be a good thing. Okay. Vast majority of production. Okay. The other main importer, Oman's total import of dates was almost equivalent to the Oman's total import value of dates, which was what? Why are they importing dates? The main importer is India, around 60% of all imports. Oman's data exports remained steady between 2006 and 2016. Oman is considered to have a good infrastructure for date production and support provision for cultivation market, but lacks innovation to farming, cultivation, industrial coordination, supply chain to counter high losses of unused dates. As if it wants to actually put that in. Someone just has a feeling about dates they want to talk about in Wikipedia. Demographics. As of 2014, Oman's population was over 4 million, with 2.23 million Omani nationals, 1.7 million expatriates. The total fertility rate was estimated at 3.7%, which is whopping high. Oman has a very young population, with 43% of its inhabitants under the age of 15. go suck. This Kumaros has more than half under 15. Nearly 50% of the population lives in Muscat and the Bahrain coastal plain, northwest of the capital. Omani people are predominantly Arabic, Balchi, and African origins. Omani society is highly tribal and encompasses three major identities, that of the tribe, the Ababi faith, and the maritime trade. That's just... Yeah, I can imagine you could be one of 10 tribes. You have to be the Ababi faith, so that's sort of like an add-on. Oh, and it encompasses three identities. The first two identities are closely tied to tradition and are especially prevalent in the interior of the country, which is owing to the lengthy periods of isolation. The third identity pertains mostly to Muscat and the coastal areas of Oman, exploited by the business trade, diverse origins of many Omanis, who trace their roots to the Baloch, Alani, Persian, historical Omani, Zanzibar. Consequently, now Zanzibar sounds fantastic, so I want Zanzibar and Dutch disease. Consequently, the third identity is generally seen to be more open and tolerant towards others, and is often in tension with the more traditional insular identities of the interior. Talk about completely mad. Whoa, this population's run away. It's grown by a factor of 2 in 20 years. That's just... too much rumpy pumpy. Okay, here we go. Coming round to you. Even though the Omani government does not keep statistics on religious affiliation, spuriously precise statistics from the US Central Intelligence Agency state that adherence to Islam is... I like how they say spuriously precise. I love that. 85.9%. Muslims, 6.5%, Christians, Hindus, Buddhists, Jews, blah, blah, blah. 11.1% Jews. I don't know why they... Most of Omanis are Muslim, of whom follow the Ababi school of Islam, followed by the Twelver school of Shia Islam. Now, so the Twelver school means it's sort of a bit like Doctor Who, in that there's going to be 12... comings of Muhammad before the very end, and so at various ages they've been spotted, and then it's diverse. So the Shia school is pretty interesting, and the Safi school of the Sunni Islams. Virtually all non-Muslims in Oman are foreign workers. Non-Muslim religions communities include various groups of Jains, Janus, Buddhists, Zoroastrians, Sikhs, Jews, Hindus, and Christians. I love Zoroastrians, yes, Persians. Christian communities are centered in the major urban area of Muscat, Sohar, Salah. These include Catholic, Eastern Orthodox, Protestant congregations organized along linguistic and ethnic lines. More than 50 different Christian groups, fellowships, and assemblies are active in the Muscat population metropolitan area, formed by migrant workers from Southeast Asia. That being said, I think the population of around the sort of greater Sydney, Newcastle, Wollongong area, that area is 5 million, so there you go. There are also communities of ethnic Hindus, Christians, Muscats, and two Hindu temples. One of them is over 100 years old. There's a significant Sheikh community in Oman. Now, the Sheikh is very interesting in that they always have a silver bracelet, so that when they're about to steal something, they look at the silver bracelet and say, "Oh, I'm a Sheikh, I can't do it, sorry." There is no permanent garawas, whatever that is, and smaller garawas, makeshift camps, to recognise government. This is something to do with the Sheikhs. The government of India has signed an accord in 2008 with the Omani government to build a permanent Gurdwara, with little progress being made on the matter. Whatever that means. Languages. Arabic is the official language of Oman. It belongs to the Semitic branch of the Afroasiatic family. Prior to Islam, central Oman lay outside of the core area spoken by Arabic. Possibly old South Arabian speakers dwelled from Batija and Safar. Rare Musnad inscriptions have often come to light in central Oman in the Emirate of Sharjah, but the script says nothing about the language which it conveys, whatever it means. A bilingual text from the 3rd century BC is written in Aramaic and Musand Hasidic. with mentions the King of Imam today. The Mehri language is limited in its distribution to an area around Salah and Zafra, westward into Yemen, but until the 18th and 19th century it was spoken further south, perhaps into central Anam. Balchi, southern Balchi, is widely spoken in Oman. Endangered indigenous languages in Oman include Kamzuri, Bathri, Hasu, Hoibot, Jabi, and Mehri. Not being helped by me in my final, I'll probably put the death blow into them. These languages are coming along perfectly well to an Australian trying to pronounce them, and then they said, time to go. I think that may be the last time you've heard anything. Omani Sign Language is a language of the deaf community. My God. Oman is also the first Arab country in the Persian Gulf to have a German taught. I must admit, why we can't have an international sign language? I don't understand. Oh, okay. Iran was the first Arab country in the Persian Gulf to have German taught as a second language. Wow. Bedouin Arabs also reached eastern and southern Arabia in migrational waves, the latest in the 18th century, brought their language and rule, including the ruling families of Bahrain, Qatar, and the United Arab Emirates. Oh. So these are Arab Bedouin tribes. At the most basic level, there are two kinds of dialects, those of the settlers and those of Bedouins who share some features. Omani dialects preserves much of vocabulary which has been lost in other Arabic dialects. C. Holes, the names, has argued convincingly that Omani Arabic has indigenous characteristics of its own, which is not derived from Bedouin or Central Arabia. They are better preserved than the neighbouring countries. Oh. According to the CIA, of course, yes, besides Arabic, English and Balchi, southern Balchi, Urdu and various Indian languages are the main languages spoken in Oman. English is widely spoken in business communities and is taught at school from an early age. Most of all signs and writings appear both in Arabic and English at tourist sites. Balchi is the mother tongue of the Baloch people from Balochistan in western Pakistan. Whoa! Eastern Iran and southern Afghanistan is also used by some descendants of Sindhi sailors. That is Sindhi. A significant number of residents who speak Urdu. So I just remember Dutch disease. I can remember the other thing I was going to look up. Totally gone from my head. A significant number of residents speak Urdu due to the influx of Pakistani immigrants during the 1980s and 90s. Additionally, Swahili is widely spoken in the country due to the historical relationship with Zanzibar. Zanzibar is such an interesting place. I'd love to know about culture. And this is, I love the first word of this, is outwardly, because you go, oh, outwardly, on the surface of things. When you first meet someone, so you think such and such, such a beautiful thing. Outwardly, Oman shares many of the cultural characteristics with Arab natives, particularly those of the Gulf Cooperation Council. Despite these similarities, important factors make Oman unique in the Middle East. They result as much of geography and history as from culture and economics. The relatively recent and artificial nature of the state of Oman makes it difficult to describe the national culture. However, sufficient cultural artifacts heterogeneity exists within the national boundaries to make Oman distinct from the Arab states of the Persian Gulf. Oman's cultural diversity is greater than that of the Arab natives, given the historical expansion of the Swahili coast and the Indian Ocean. Which is saying it's unique because it's heterogenic. Oman has a long tradition of shipbuilding, as maritime travel played a major role in Omani's ability to stay in contact with civilization. It was a massive, sort of like, it's Omani's, Oman sounds a bit like the New York feature. New York is American, but it's a big melting pot, isn't it? Oman has a long tradition of shipbuilding, as maritime travel played a major role in Oman's ability to stay in contact with civilizations of the ancient world. Sur, S-U-R, was one of the most famous shipbuilding cities in the Indian Ocean. The Al Gahan ship takes one whole year to build. Other types of Omani ship include the As Solk and the Al Baton. These are now complete. You know, this is, it's pretty amazing that the container ship is sort of like, you've got all this intricacy, tall sails, and then along comes the container ship pumped, belched out of Korea. In March 2016, archaeologists, Oman has a long tradition of shipbuilding as maritime travel, we've read this. Other types of Omani ship, In March 2016, archaeologists working off Al Halinu Island identified a shipwreck believed to be that of the Esmeralda from Vasco da Gama's 1502 to 1503 fleet. The wreck was initially discovered in 1998. Later underwater excavations took place between 2013 and 2015 through the partnership between the Oman Ministry of Heritage and Culture and the Blue Water Recoveries, the ship recovery company. The vessel was identified through such artifacts as the Portuguese coin minted for the trade with India, one of only two coins of this type known to exist, and the stone cannibals engraved with what appeared to be the initials Vince Sotra de Gama's maternal uncle and commander of Esmeralda, and possibly the word Esmeralda written everywhere, but I don't know. Dress, the male national dress, it's going to be the white thing, and if it was South America, it was these massive dresses, which of course it meant that you're going to move somewhere, you may as well put on all your dresses, I suppose. The male national dress of Oman consists of the dash, a simple ankle-length collarless gown with long sleeves, most frequently white in colour. This sash also appears in a variety of other colours. Its main adornment, a tassel, faruka, sewn at the neckline, can be impregnated with perfume. Wow. Underneath the dasher, the men wear a plain, what do you wear underneath your dasher? White strip cloth wrapped around the body from the waist down. The most noted regional, that's a bit confusing. You need some elastic. You need some undax there. Let's read this. Differences in dish dasha designs are the style in which they are embroidered, which varies according to the age group. On formal occasions, black or beige cloak is called a bishit. It may cover the dasha. The embroidery edging of the cloak is often silver and gold. Now, here's a traditional dagger. So that's what it is. They have this dagger, which is in their central emblem. So it's the only country. There's a few countries. Does the country have a machine gun? One. This is a dagger. Okay. Omani men wear two types of headdress. The gathra or muska is a square piece of cloth woven wool or cotton fabric in a single colour, decorated with various embroidered patterns. The kumar is a cap on the head. Dress worn during leisure hours. It looks as though he's wearing some sort of soup bowl. That person who's been persecuted in Britain for writing. Some men carry an asher, a stick, which have practical uses or is simply used as an accessory during formal events. Omani men, on a whole, wear sandals on their feet. Yeah, so could always have your stick. The Cannes Decker, the Kanjar Decker, forms part of the national dress of men and wear the Kanjar on all formal public occasions and festivals. Well, I don't know how you get through security. It's traditionally worn on the waist. Sheaths may vary from a simple ornate silver or gold decorated pieces. It's a symbol of man's origin, his manhood and courage. Yeah, well, there you go. A depiction of the Kanjar appears on the national flag. Oh, my God. And it's the most... It looks really... I shouldn't say it looks a bit like some sort of vegetable or poo. Amani women wear eye-catching national costumes with distinctive regional variations. All costumes incorporate vivid colours and vibrant embroidery and decorations. In the past, the choice of colours reflected the tribe's tradition. Amani's women's traditional costumes comprises of several garments. Oh my God. The Kanjar, which is a long tunic whose sleeves or radun are adorned with hand-stitched embroidery of various designs. The Dishtara is worn over a pair of loose-fitting trousers tight at the ankles, known as the kwal. Women also wear a head shawl, most commonly referred as the lahaf. So it's a bit like the those daks, you know, the Arabian Nights, where they gather at the bottom. As of 2014, women reserve wearing their traditional dress for special occasions and instead wear loose black cloaks called abaya over their personal choice of clothing. Whilst in some regions, particularly amongst the Bedouin, the burqa is still worn. Oh my God. Women wear hijab, and though some women cover their faces and hands, most do not. The Sultan has forbidden the covering of faces in public offices. There you go. That's sorted that one out. Music and cinema. Music in Oman is extremely diverse due to Oman's imperial legacy. There are over 130 different forms of traditional Omani songs and dances. Yes. That is diverse within a range, I suppose. The Oman Center for Traditional Music was established in 1985 to preserve them. In 1985, the Sultan Qubuz founded, this is the one who died in 1920 to 1970, alive for a very long time. The Royal Oman Symphony Orchestra, and act attributed to his love of classical music. Instead of engaging foreign musicians, he decided to establish the orchestra to train up Omanis. In July, oh my God, that would be just so awful. In 1987, at the Albaz Hotel, the Royal Omani gave an inaugural concert. Oh God, that's it. You have never been heard of before again. The cinema in Oman is very small. There is only one Omani film called Al Boom. I would love to see that film. Oh, how much smaller can you get making one film, Al Boom? The Oman Arab Cinema Company is the single largest motion picture exhibitor chain in Oman. It belongs to the Jawad Sultan Group of Companies, which has a history of spanning more than 40 years in the Sultanate of Oman. In popular music, a 7-minute music video about Omani went viral, achieving 500,000 views on YouTube within 10 days of being released on YouTube in November 1915. The Capella, so what's the name of the tube? The Capella production features three of the region's most popular talents: Jashi musician Al-Wazami, Omani poet Mini Al-Habi, and actress Butani Al-Rassi. Wow. Gee, I would like to see that. So, Dutch disease, that's all I can remember. Oh, crap. Isn't that amazing? I'll remember about that. The government has continuously held a monopoly on television. What's on TV? A rerun of your Sultan. Oman TV is the only state-owned national television channel broadcast in Oman. It began broadcasting for the first time in 1974 And separately in Muscat, and separately in 75. In June 79, two stations at Muscat and Salah linked by satellite to form a unified broadcasting service. Currently, Oman TV broadcasts 4 HD channels, including General TV, Sport TV, Live, and Cultural. My God. Although private ownership of the radio and television stations is permitted, Oman has only one privately owned television channel. Majan TV is the first private channel in Oman. It began broadcasting in 2009. However, Majan TV official channel website was last updated in early 2010. Moreover, the public access to foreign broadcasts since the use of satellite receivers is allowed. Omani Radio is the first and only state-owned radio channel. So I like this. They have the Royal Omani Philharmonic Orchestra, and it does one performance, and it's never heard of a game. I don't know. I need it. Okay, Virgin Radio Oman, what? And merge in 2018. Muscat Media Group, trend-setting media group founded by Essa bin Muhammad Al Zeji. So Essa, my dad is Muhammad. Was Muhammad Al Zeji launched a new private radio stations in the hopes of catering for educative and entertaining programs to the youth of the Sultanate. Oman has 9 main newspapers, better than the one or two in Qatar and stuff like that. 5 Arabic and 4 English. Instead of relying on sales or state subsidies, private newspapers depend on advertising revenues to obtain and sustain themselves. What? I just have to export that to the rest of the world. The media landscape in Oman has been continuously described as restrictive, sensitive, and subdued. I would add, probably dull. The Ministry of Information censors politically, culturally, and sexually offensive materials in domestic and foreign media. Press Freedom Group Reporters Without Borders ranked the country as 127th out of 180 countries in the 2018 World Press Freedom Index. In 2016, the government drew international criticism for suspending newspaper Azam and arresting 3 journalists after a report on the corruption of the country's judiciary. Azam is not allowed to reopen to 2017, although an appeal court ruled that in late 2016, the paper could resume operating. Well, it's pretty amazing. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.